We have up here Les DeBuey, a very fine trumpet player with the Yard Ensemble of Chicago, among other groups and bands he's put together. Right now I want to welcome you up to the Miles Davis Festival, Lester.
All right, thank you, hello.
And sometimes people joke around here that Les DeBuey is now Miles Davis. He's when people have listened to Dreaming of the Master on your latest record, you know, we always think of, you know, Miles, and I'm sure there's a lot of Miles, you know, he means a lot to you.
Yeah, he means a lot to me, but there's only one Miles Davis. Mm-hmm. I mean, there can never be another Miles Davis. That's it. They only cast one mold of that one.
Right. Well, tell me, when was the first time you heard Miles? I guess you heard him a lot when you were growing up playing trumpet.
Well, I heard Miles, I was trying to think exactly what was happening when we were listening to that last record. That was made in 56. Now, 56, yeah. I think I was in the high school marching band there somewhere. And Miles Davis was kind of like he was a famous St. Louis cat, so everybody kind of heard of him, and everybody knew all the songs he was making during that time. You had to know all those songs to even be able to work a jazz gig. So he was very influential.
And your father, you know, was involved in music too, and I guess, did he always talk about Miles too? Because I guess he probably saw Miles maybe when he was a teenager.
No, my old man wasn't, plus my old man is so old, he was old. I mean, way before Miles was born, you dig?
Yeah.
But my old man wasn't into jazz at all. I mean, he didn't know anything about any jazz cats. I mean, George Hudson used to want to get him to play in the band, but my old man was more of a marching band type dude, and high school band director, and classical type, mm-hmm. you know. But Miles, like I say, once I got interested in music, I mean, Miles was the standard at that time, him and Clark Carey. These were standards that we had to look up to, you know, growing up in St. Louis, and we had to know all those songs, you know, because that's all the people wanted to hear at the joints. You know, you go in the joints, you want to hear Firework Bell, you know, Put Your Little Foot, a lot of whole business. That's all they wanted to hear. So, and plus it was great music. I mean, Miles was probably the single most influential musician in my life. I mean, I've been influenced by a great many. I mean, just about all of them influenced me in one way or another. But Miles, I believe, is the single most, the biggest.
Why is that?
I mean, for many ways, because Miles, the thing about Miles is more than a person. Miles is a movement. I mean, if you're into Miles, you're into more than just liking jazz. You're into more than just liking the trumpet. You're into a movement. If you're into Miles, you're hip. You understand? You understand more. You're more knowing. You're more tolerant. You're more many things. I mean, you are a much larger person if you're into Miles as a movement. Because his thing is, his music was so great that it transcended being just music. You know, for me, like, once music goes so far, I don't know what it is anymore. It's just something that's alive. And it's, I can't analyze it or say, here comes an A7 or it went this way, it becomes something else. And Miles has done that. He was so great in the music that it meant a lot of more things than just the music to a lot of people. I mean, people. And Miles is a whole, that's the name of a whole era. And he came up with giants like Diz, Clifford, Bird, and he carved himself out a big piece of that. So he's great.
Yeah, you were working a lot in East St. Louis where Miles was from, and I was just wondering if you heard, and you know, did you, when you worked in joints around there, did you hear a lot about Miles and maybe when he was, you know, a teenager, if he had worked over there?
No, I mean, when I came up in St. Louis, see, Miles was in New York by then.
Yeah.
When Miles was in St. Louis, I didn't know nothing about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
At that time, like, I didn't really start getting hip to nothing in St. Louis about that 55, 56, when I got in high school, I started hanging out at these joints. And there was a cat there named Bobby Danzy, trumpet player. He was a good trumpet player, good friend of Miles. And he had that whole same approach. Like I said, all the cats had this, you know, this thing, you dig. So anyway, he took me under his wing. He happened to live a couple blocks away from me. And I was about 15. And I used to go around his house, and he used to show me different songs and stuff, you know. So he kind of got me into Miles. He taught me a lot of things, you know.
Was Bobby a friend of Miles's too?
Bobby was a friend of Miles's, right.
Yeah. And did Miles work a lot in St. Louis when he was in high school at those type of places, or just?
I mean, I would assume that he did, because he's with Eddie Randall. So I'm sure, like, right. Miles came up, he was with Eddie Randall. When I came up, Eddie Randall's son was playing bass with me. I mean, I knew Eddie.
Yeah.
Right, and Eddie, see, Eddie and his son's both Undertakers there. But Eddie, I think he still got a band, too. Mm-hmm. But Miles was way before me. Mm-hmm. And when I had come up, even if, when I was small, I mean, Miles, I didn't see him coming in and out or anything like that. You know, because by the time I really got old enough to hang out real tough, I was gone.
Mm-hmm. When you go look, okay, you started getting into Miles in 56. What pieces, you know, a lot from 56 on through the 60s, you know, which were some of the first pieces that really blew you away? And you knew that, you know.
Well, when I first heard Miles, I dig this. Now, when I first heard Miles, maybe I should say it right here. Now, out of all the trumpet players, it really influenced me, right? I got three biggies. The first one was Kenny Dorham. I mean, it really, Kenny Dorham threw water on me and woke me up, you dig? After I woke up, Freddie Hubbard slapped me, you dig, to let me know what it was all about. After Freddie Hubbard finished slapping me, Miles kicked me in the ass. You dig? So, I mean, it really meant a lot to me. Now, the way he did it was this. Like, first, I didn't even dig Miles. I said, man, this cat can't play. What is this? You know, it ain't got no tone. Because then I was, you know, I'm heading to the marching bands, I'm playing the football games and shit, you know. Bugle chords, big, loud, you know. I like lowering them cats, you know, like Diz. Cats that can play loud, you know. So anyway, I said, well, I didn't even dig Miles, so I got out of Miles. I said, well, Miles, as far as I'm concerned, ain't shit. You dig? So I slid him onto the side and didn't get woke up until later by Kenny Dorham. Like I said, that's when it got in order. Like, I knew a lot of things, but I hadn't put them together in my mind. And then Kenny Dorham just, like, threw that water on me and got me together. And then Freddie Hubbard woke me up to that. I had to play trumpet. Freddie Hubbard's an excellent trumpet player. And his message was that he said, slap, you're going to have to play this horn here. I mean, that's what he said, you dig? So then Miles said, you got to do it in an original manner with personal feeling, you dig? I mean, plus all these other things. See, his Miles things opened you up not only into music, but a whole way of life. For me, is, you know, preferable.
Mm-hmm. It's not only, you know, being real slick with the horn, I guess, just appearance and
everything.
Really cool, yeah.
Everything, mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. So when was this, what, you know, when did you learn this? When did you realize this, I guess?
Well, let's see, when, you know, like, the way I learned how to play was just by what I call microscoping caps. If I like cat play something I like, I just figure out how he did it. Ask him how he did it, watch, see how he did it. If it's on the record, I play the record over and over till I can figure it out. And anyway, as I had been microscoping cats, and as I came back to Miles, I saw that he did things in a completely different way. I mean, I really got an appreciation for the way he was making these changes and these inflections. And I really got to see that he had a whole different way, and it was completely different from all the other trumpet players. So, you know.
And he would just use one note, you know, he wouldn't, you know.
Very expressive, he concentrated. You could tell, you could hear the concentration, excuse me, in each note, you could hear it, you know.
And you can, when you watch him play, you know, he really was straining to you, like his neck, you know, you could see. Mm-hmm. What were some other things that you really liked, dug about his playing, you know?
Oh, see, everything.
Everything?
Mm-hmm. I mean, just the sound of it. I mean, Bobby Danz used to tell me, man, see, you got to have that tongue in there. You got to put that tongue in all the notes. He used to tell me, you know, when I was little, I said, damn, what's this guy talking about? But he was saying tongue all the notes. He would show me these things. He said, tongue. He said, listen to Miles, tongue the notes. And I got to see that that was the way you made him really expressive, because then you could put any sort of individual attack on the note that you wanted to. Miles has a very expressive sort of thing. I mean, his tone varies much more than a lot of other trumpet players. I mean, from one
area to another. It can be very warm and fuzzy and bent and kind of, you know, and it can be very icy sometimes or very hot, you know. It's really kind of weird how he does that. But I got a really nice appreciation for him doing that.
Plus, in the later days, he would be playing sometimes it seemed a lot faster and it was a lot more intense, you know, the whole.
Yeah, right. Well, I wouldn't know. It seemed like he did. But some of the stuff I've been hearing on this festival, he was playing pretty intense a long time ago.
He was. Mm-hmm. Are there any particular, I know a lot of things have really struck you in this festival.
Yeah, a lot of things I never heard before. Uh-huh. And that's what I really like. I mean, it's so much music. I mean, people would be surprised how much music we musicians don't have. I mean, one day I hope I'll be able to have all these records so I can really microscope him some more. But, Malachi just got a record player, I think, last year. And I mean, I know so many cats don't even have record players or records. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's really nice hearing that music.
When did you first see Miles live? Do you remember?
Let's see, when was that? I saw Miles first time live, I believe, when he came back to St. Louis. Yeah, I did see him come to St. Louis one time. He came back to St. Louis. This was when he first had the band with Tony and
Herbie.
And Herbie and, was it George Coleman was playing? Oh, it was Wayne Shorter was playing saxophone. Ron Carter. They had come there, they had just got that band together. They had just got it together and they had come to St. Louis and they were playing in this joint called the Jazz Villa, you dig? Now, the Jazz Villa at this time, and this was like 63, I guess, mm-hmm. was a place that was trying to bring jazz back to downtown St. Louis, and they had this nice club, you know, and they had Miles Davis come in. It was about 7 people there. I mean, every night, it was about 7-8 people. This is a hometown, you dig, Miles? I hadn't even been back in 7-8 years. Had this terrible young band. And it was about 10-12 people that night. You know, but I mean, they were smoking, but it was really a funny band because they were all really very young. And they had just gotten with the band and they all had these little jackets on, you dig? These little checkered jackets with their name on them. It was a little red circle, you dig? I said Tony and Herbie, Rod. You know, it was some weird cats because we was looking at them. You know, we said, "Damn, there's some weird dudes here, boy." But they was playing good. You know, they were good young. You know, they were playing really good.
When did you first meet Miles?
Meet him. See, the first time I met him one time at the Plug Nickel. Was the first time I met him. And that was about, what was that? My man's gone already. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It must have been, it had to be in the 60s sometime in Chicago. Maybe it was 65 or 66. That was the first time. And the second time was a few months ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you went over to his house once. I remember Philip Wilson was telling me.
Yeah, I was over there a few months ago. But it was nice.
He kind of, he let you play his old trumpet, didn't he?
Yeah. I told him, I said, man, too much dust in his horn. This thing won't work no more.
Did you get a note out of it?
Yeah, I got a note out of it. It was funny, boy. It was really, Miles is really like, see, I mean, I've always loved his music. I had one run-in with him years ago I'd met him just briefly. And then this last time, like I said, I'd never met the cat really. So I just happened to be across the street from his crib. So I, rang the bell, and he let me on in there, and we started rapping. And man, this cat is the funniest cat. I mean, really nice cat.
Yeah.
And funny, man. I mean, it's unbelievable how funny he is. I mean, like, he did this thing, because we were just, drinking and having fun. Anyway. Miles, okay, man. He said, Lester, yeah, just check this. Yeah, man, Lester's bad. Lester can play. Man. Hey, Lester, Fleeto, play a note for me, Lester. Play a note for me. I said, oh, man, Miles, get away from me with that shit, Come on, man, play a note for me, baby, play a note. So, so I said, okay. So I hit a note. I said, Bob, Miles got this big frown on his face and put his hand over there and said, oh, man, goddamn, you ain't. whole night was just like that funny. Really funny kind.
Mm-hmm.
Really. And a beautiful musician, the whole institution.
Okay, well, we're talking to Lester Bowie here, and we'll talk more about his little excursion over to Miles' house in a little while, but let's go back and listen to some more music. There's some version of Walkin' There by Miles Davis from the Plug Nickel. And how'd you like that? You didn't get to hear too much of it, Lester, but...
Yeah, I was in and out, but I liked anything Miles played. Whatever Miles played, I liked it.
Mm-hmm. When you visited Miles, did he talk about his music at all, or...?
No, he didn't talk too much about music. Well, he did talk about music. Mm-hmm. We just kind of talked, you know. We didn't sit up and specifically say, yes, well,
just,
you know, what is
this?
You know, I mean, we're just having fun, you know, just drinking, sitting up drinking and talking about a lot of the people, you know, a lot of people that we knew in common, that, you know, a lot of things like that.
Yeah, the Manhattan School of Music's right around here, and that most of the people live, it's funny, down near Miles's, and it seems like everyone you meet from there, you know, they know Miles, all these young, you know, all the young women there.
Yeah, I know the young women do.
Mm-hmm. When you talked to him, did he talk about any of his plans, you know?
No, we didn't even talk about plans.
No plans.
Anything like that. I mean, you know.
He just enjoys.
I mean, we would joke about certain things. You know, I told him as much dust as it wasn't in that front, but I know he didn't have no plans of playing it no more. But other than that, you know, we didn't even talk about that. We just hung out.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he plays much? He doesn't play too much trumpet, does he?
Well, he plays at home. I mean, we played some together. He got the horns out, you know. We noodled around a little bit, you know.
What kind of noodling did y'all?
I mean, you know, we just played, you know, just played a few things.
Mm-hmm.
I told him we ought to go on and get a duo. That would be really slick, you know, but, you know, that was just a joke. But as a joke, I mean, you have to understand that we weren't seriously, I wasn't there trying to psychoanalyze him or discuss things or find out what his feelings were on subjects that may or may not have been sensitive. I don't know nothing about all that stuff. I was just there saying hello to Miles because I love him, because he's meant so much to me. And through his knowledge, I've learned so much from him. It's important for me to be able to have some sort of exchange with him so I can just let him know just how much I've learned from him. I've learned how to be Lester Bowie. So, I mean, I think it's important that he knows that. Other than that, whatever he wants to do, that's his business, you know. I mean, I dig him. He looks cool to me.
Yeah. He's also, you see him every now and then. He's into boxing and lots of things like
that.
Yeah, I saw him. He used to fight, too, didn't he?
Well, he probably didn't fight nobody. I can't imagine Miles fighting nobody. He probably played like he fight somebody. Go out and hang out in the gym, you dig, and hit the bag or something. I know he didn't want to face any of them dudes in the ring, you know. Mm-hmm. You can look at his nose and see that. Gotta be the poppy right in the nose first.
Kind of like that picture on Olio, you know, with the
hat on. Yeah, you know, but he probably trained, you know. I saw him the other night at the Palomino and Duran Holmes fight. And he was, you know, jumping around and stuff. Nothing wrong with him. Look healthy to me, mentally and physically.
You knew Pete Cozy, and you worked with Pete Cozy a lot. Did he mention, you know, any of his workings with Pete at all?
No, you mean, did Miles mention anything about that? No, I mean, we weren't even into that. I mean, we weren't even into, you know, just
talk to
that. We were just, you know, like cats, like, you know, like this cat Bobby Danzy, which was close to Miles. It is he was close to me to help me get together. We were talking about things like Bobby's got sugar and that, they've cut off his leg, you know, and things like that, you know. The status on the cast, some of the old cast that was around there when he was there, you know. Things like that.
What about when you talked to Pete, what were some of the things that Pete talked about in the music? Did you talk to him much about the music he and Miles made?
Pete may mainly be talking about eating.
I believe that.
He's talking about some real food or something.
Does he have time to talk about food? Yeah. He's always eating.
Now, me and Pete are old friends. Me and Pete go way back to when I first used to go up to Chicago to do little Milton Records and Albert King Records and when Fontella Bass Records. He was in the studio. He was a Chess studio guitar player. But Pete's an excellent guitar player. I mean, he can really get down. I mean, one time we did a thing, this rhythm section was Pete and Malachi and a guy named Bob Crowder.
Bob Crowder, yeah.
I mean, it was a dangerous rhythm section, really dangerous. But I've been knowing Pete a long time. I knew him when he was small, you dig? I knew Pete when he weighed about 150 pounds.
I think Eddie Karp once asked something you're gonna have to.
All right.
Well, it's okay, you can continue and I'll kind of, I mean, I was just, well, I guess that what I was curious about was that you've been playing with Jack DeJohnette a good deal as of late, and, you know, I was wondering if you've gotten any insight into Miles' later work through your work with Jack.
How do you mean, insight into his later work?
Well, I mean, just, you know, rapping to Jack about, you know, his experience with Miles in the more recent part of his career, and I guess Miles was making use of long, using long tunes, long improvisations, as the Art Ensemble does now in their live performances. And I'm just curious to know if there was any kind of influence, or if it's been discussed. Or.
Well, I mean, things like this, you have to understand that we, as musicians, sometimes think of them in entirely different terms. Like in the terms you just described, I wouldn't even know what you're talking about. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't know what you mean, long improvisational, you know, thematical excursions or whatever. I don't even know what that means. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I think I do know what you mean. I guess.
I mean, what I'm saying is that the insight I get into a person's work is his product, the music that he produces. Now, what that is a feeling to me. I feel it automatically if I like Miles. Why? I mean, maybe I could describe, get some a string of adjectives together and maybe describe what it does, but it's just something natural that gets to me about Miles. I mean, I didn't just, you know, it's just natural. I mean, I naturally dig whatever he's doing and whatever his recent things. Miles's thing is that he was always an excellent musician. He always had excellent musicians playing with him. Jack DeJohnette was just one of the latest in the string of just excellent drummers. He always had excellent drummers. Jack is an excellent drummer. I mean, he was always like that, you know. So as far as that insight into his music, that he always associates himself with the best musician, I already knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so whatever else he was doing was cool.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we leave your microphone on right now, Lester, and play this next tune, We, or Rambunctious Rambling, and you know, we'll leave it on, and as, you know, Miles solos, you can, you know, point out a few things that, you know, really hit you on that. Right now he's queuing it up, and we'll be there in a second.
All right.